Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. Today is Thursday. According to sources familiar with the matter, they've informed me it is the 12th of November, 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Apple event media sensation, Ken Case. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Kelly. It's nice to be here with you.
I'm glad you're here. Thank you. First of all, thank you so much for coming by. And second of all, the other thing people may know you for is being the founder and CEO of Omni Group.
That's certainly how I spend a lot more of my time, shall we say.
You mean it's not all just playing the harp?
It has, I would say, yes, it is not all playing the harp. It is 99.99% not playing the harp.
Okay, and there's the show title. All right, so part of what I wanted to talk to you about, Ken, is Omni Group's been around a really long time. So you've done transitions before, 68K to PowerPC, for people who remember that, Mac OS 9 to Mac OS 10, going from those PowerPC processors to Intel processors, and then now you have two at the same time, because finally Apple decided they were done with Mac OS 10, 10.14, 10.15, and finally rolled the number over on the odometer to 11. So we have Mac OS 11 coming.
This one goes to 11.
This one goes to 11. None more black. And additionally, we also have brand new hardware to run this brand new software on. So you kind of got it from both sides at once this time around. And how did that work for you? Because I know generally Omni Group spends the summer prepping for the thing that's coming, but this time you had two that you had to worry about.
Yeah, well, really three, right? Because we always, over the summer, we have to worry about, of course, whatever's happening on the Mac,
iOS,
but also whatever's happening on iOS, iPad, yeah, and iPhone. And so this year we had a lot to think about. But what we had to do then, we knew we didn't have time to do everything. So we had to focus on what our priorities were. And we decided our priority was to make sure that we would be ready on day one for the new Mac hardware, whatever that turned out to be.
Okay.
So that is where we put our emphasis this summer.
Okay. So that means that there were some iOS 14 things that did not happen when iOS 14 rolled out that have come fashionably late to the party, we'll say.
Well, thank you for the fashionable side of things. Yes, we were not, unlike most years, we were not there on day one, the day that iOS 14 shipped, with a bunch of iOS 14 features. We actually did have, we had updates that were compatible with the operating system, and we had some minor feature adoption, like we had the new date picker in there and so on. Mm-hmm. But the feature that people really wanted and kept asking us for was iOS 14 widgets that they could put on their home screens. And okay. And I'm pleased to say that those finally shipped this week on Monday.
Excellent. That's good to hear. So give us an example of what you can do with a widget, because I know that widgets have pretty limited functionality. So there's only a certain amount of options available to you as far as what you're allowed to do within that widget. So what do those widgets do for Omni apps?
Sure. So widgets are not allowed to have any logic that runs in them and changes what they're displaying in real time. They can sort of pre-program changes that will happen through the day, and they can pre-program links that you can, when you tap on a widget, it can send you out to back to the app or something in order to make something happen. So you can't, for example, check off items in OmniFocus, but you can click on a day in your forecast and open up that day in the app itself. So what we did with iOS 14 widgets is we programmed them to display any of your perspectives from the app. So you can have a widget that will show you forecast and the task for today, whatever you've sort of set out there. But you can also build your own custom widgets with custom perspectives that maybe show you your inbox or show you your work tasks and show your home tasks as different things. And of course, since they're widgets, you can stack them up together and flip between them.
Okay.
It's really, some people I've seen them set up, you know, a home screen dedicated to OmniFocus widgets, and it's really become kind of like a dashboard for them that makes it really easy to get to whatever list they're trying to think about.
Wow. So
it's a pretty fun new feature, really. I'm glad that it's available now. I'm sorry it wasn't available on launch day.
I think it's here now.
Now
that you say, like, turning a page of, you know, what used to be a page of apps into your OmniFocus dashboard sounds really interesting. And it sounds like somebody just sort of took it to a ludicrous degree to get what they wanted out of it. And I'm kind of interested to see what that looks like now. I have no need for that, but I'm always really impressed at the kind of stuff that people set up, you know, as their systems. So I think that's interesting. Now, as far as the hardware side, you did get a developer transition kit computer that you could actually run your software on in order to prepare for the new M1 machines, right? It still sounds weird to say, but I'm going to say M1 a bunch of times. So
M1. Yeah, M1 powered Macs.
Yes.
It's exciting to... It's still weird for me to be able to admit to any of this because, you know, Apple and their secrets. But now that I've been in it for so long. And an event where it was, you know, clearly mentioned that we have our stuff ready to go, I guess I can talk about it a little bit. we've received a developer transition kit. That's what these prototype things were called. And really, that was an iPad CPU, like from last year's, I don't know, not a modern CPU, not the things that they have in, say, the iPhones that are shipping now, but an older iPad CPU hooked up into kind of a Mac Mini enclosure. And then you use it like a Mac Mini. You plug it into a keyboard, plug it into a display, and you start porting your software.
Okay. Now, porting to Mac OS 11, which is also another thing I'm going to have to say a bunch of times before it feels like an actual thing. When in doing that, you kind of, because of things that were required for upgrading to, you know, making sure you were compatible with Mojave and making sure that you were compatible with Catalina, that was a lot of the stuff that needed to happen in order to go to Big Sur, right?
Yeah, they were all really kind of steps along a path, though it wasn't necessarily obvious at any point along that path.
It's never
to those of us from
the
outside.
Nobody ever knows when we start getting what feels like arbitrary requirements for things from Apple. Like it never makes sense until the end.
Yeah, like looking back, 15 years, Apple had established this priority that when they were making changes to Safari, their first priority was going to be that they would never have a regression in speed. I mean, they would never have Safari get slower than it was before. So whenever anybody made a change, they had to make it faster.
Okay.
Or at least keep it the same speed. And that always, at the time, that seemed crazy to me. But like, why is this performance the most important thing when maybe you need to add a feature to fix bolding, and bolding is slower than when you didn't support bolding, and don't you want your page to look correct? And of course, it wasn't something quite that basic, but there were features that they dropped along the way or didn't add because they couldn't make it perform. And the reason for that now makes so much more sense now that we've seen that the iPhone was introduced in 2007, right? Knowing that the iPhone existed and that they were making Safari run on that limited hardware made some of those decisions make sense. And in the same way, knowing that this hardware is coming helps put some of the decisions around, like, dropping support for 32-bit software into context.
Yeah, which honestly to me was only notable because we'd done it on iOS already. And so I just thought maybe the folks on the Mac side had just gotten, like, they had gotten another year or two before they had to do it. But since it had happened on iOS, when it was like, oh, by the way, the next one won't run, you know, and we get the second wave of 32-bit apocalypse, it didn't seem surprising, except that it was, like, I think 2 years after it happened on iOS. And so that's the only reason I was surprised, was that it took so long. But it totally makes sense why those were forsaken. So you've been through a lot of these transitions. How does this on the software side, if we just talk about the software piece of it going to Big Sur, how does that stack up, like, as in the, you know, it, as you compare it to, like, going from OS 9 to Mac OS 10 and things like that?
Sure. Well, it's not as big a transition as it was from Mac OS 9 to Mac OS 10, because those we were going from like not even having protected memory to having a real operating system underneath. That was a pretty huge transition. So this wasn't quite that level, but this was more like, I would say, the iOS 6 to iOS 7 transition, where there's now a new look and feel. Of course, we're supporting universal apps, but that's not really new to the Mac. It was, in fact, something that Mac OS 10 had to support for a number of years when we were doing the transition to Intel from PowerPC.
Yeah.
So that's sort of old hat for us now. And in fact, that part of the transition of going from one processor to another was really the easiest part of this. Anybody who watched the event probably saw that a lot of developers were saying, yeah, it, you know, that just took a few hours, or I just had to click the thing and try it, and it was working. That isn't always universally true, but
sure.
But it certainly was. That was the easiest part of this transition for us, was adding the architecture back, especially because the architecture we're going to, this M1 powered Mac, is based on the same Apple silicon instruction sets and so on that we're already familiar with the iPhone and iPad. Right. So it's kind of like coming back home to the platform we already know. We already have the same tools, yeah, the same debuggers. We know how to make things run well there.
So does it feel like you are less constrained in any way by running this on M1 machines as opposed to Intel machines? Like, does it feel like, I know that it's not the machines that are shipping next week, but even on the developer transition kit machines on there, does it feel snappier and more responsive than it did on the Intel machines? Or
Oh yeah. No, that was my experience, is that things were already feeling smoother and more responsive before, even if we were running our older apps that hadn't been ported at all to the native Apple Silicon.
Oh, wow.
Like if I ran an older copy of OmniGraffle, for example, it was already behaving beautifully in, using Apple's Rosetta technology that runs these Intel binaries on the new M1 processor. Well, in our case, we weren't on M1 yet, but yeah. On Apple Silicon.
On the developer hardware. Yeah. So,
and as we set things up, like we had these builds set up for, we had, an internal software update feed that had Apple Silicon builds in them, and I installed that on my machine. But for a little while there, we accidentally were still publishing links into that feed that pointed at the public test builds, which didn't have Apple Silicon support in them. Oh. And I would just update, and I wouldn't even realize that I had gone back to using a Rosetta Intel build. It was that smooth. Until it was slower. Like, it's even faster when it's a native universal app.
Yeah.
But it was a great experience. It's been really my primary workstation through the summer.
That gives me a lot of hope. So, as long time, all the way back to like yesterday or day before, listeners know, I purchased I've ordered, it's not here yet, but I've ordered a 13-inch MacBook Pro. Have you ordered anything new?
I have, but I'm kind of an extreme case. I've ordered one of everything that they did that's new. So I ordered the new Mac Mini, of course. That's actually my primary desktop machine is a Mac Mini. Actually, it's multiple Mac Minis. They're attached up to a KVM, so I just flip a switch and I can go from one to the next. And that way they can run different operating systems and I can test things there.
Okay.
Then, of course, if I'm on the go, a Mac Mini is not the most useful device for that.
Yeah, it's not the most portable of the Macs, especially even of the Macs announced yesterday.
Yeah, right. So I'm not actually sure which one I'm going to want to end up using more, the MacBook Pro or the Mac Mini, the MacBook Air, when I'm on the go. And so I have one of each coming, and I am sure I will have a family member who will be happy to take the one that I end up not using. Let's put it that way. But I'll test how builds are on each of them and kind of get a feel for that.
There's a lot of discussion about sort of the difference between a MacBook Pro and a MacBook Air, especially now. tune in to yesterday's episode of Daily Observations, where we kind of hashed it out. And you know, we're not going to know in practical terms until we get time with the actual shipping machines. So knowing that the Rosetta translation, which I know for some people is giving them, you know, bad acid flashbacks right now when I say Rosetta, but it's nice to know that it was a very, very good experience. That gives me hope, because that's one of the things I was sort of wondering was how is the stuff that I actually use going to hold up on this new hardware? So I'm glad to know it sounds like it's going to be pretty good. So you've had to do a lot of updating over the summer. So you've kind of got new, all of it available now.
Yeah, well, we, as I already mentioned, we have OmniGraffle running there. We have OmniFocus running now as a universal app on M1 powered Macs. I'll try to get used to saying that.
Yeah, M1 Macs, yes.
M1. We have OmniOutliner, of course, and OmniPlan. And then we went ahead and brought our other, like our free apps over. So we have OmniPresence, OmniDiskSweeper, and even OmniWeb running on
OmniWeb.
Apple Store.
Okay. Yeah, I know I have at least one listener who's very excited about OmniWeb. Hi, Jeff. He'll be very pleased to know that it's coming forward. So there was another question I was going to ask you. Now I don't remember what it was. So the Rosetta stuff has gone well. You've got all of your apps geared up. Was there anything that sort of ended up being more difficult than you thought it might be?
I think, well, in some ways, things were easier than we thought it might be. But the thing that I ended up spending more time on and was surprised by was when we brought our apps, not really to the new processor, but to the new operating system, and found that if we built using the old shipping Xcode and ran the apps on the new operating system, they looked one way. But if we built them with the new version of Xcode, it would change the default behaviors around things like white space padding in the sidebars and in various tables and so on, or even sort of the background material that's used for the sidebar, how you know, what the what vibrancy looks like in different places, what the toolbars look like. All of that stuff changed as you started adopting the new Xcode. So we would have different bugs to worry about depending on whether we built with the old thing or the new thing. And so we had to say, okay, well, our build servers for these builds are always going to use, you know, the new Xcode, because that's where we're going, we're headed, and then start working through, okay, well, that's now changed this white space, and, you know, maybe some of the controls have fallen off the right edge of our of a table. And so we need to go change our layout and readjust it so that it works in this with the new SDK. So that was a little bit surprising. It took a lot of kind of detailed testing and working through our apps. And I wouldn't be shocked. Our apps have a lot of detail to them throughout the whole thing. We've gone looking. We've, of course, had some of this stuff in public test for a while. Mm-hmm. And so we've gotten a lot of feedback about it. But we may have missed someplace. And if so, we're going to, you know, we may still be tracking down a few edge cases here and there. Certainly all of the obvious things when you first launch the app are now working well. But that doesn't mean that we're done forever.
Oh, sure.
There'll be bug fixes for a while.
Yeah. And now that we have M1 powered Macs, see, now I have to do it too. Now that we have M1 powered Macs, and we know that that's sort of going to be the future, what does that mean for app development, for specifically for you? I know you can't speak for everybody else, but like at Omni Group, what is that? Like, what does having all of this new hardware and new architecture and how you know, system tasks are handled being fundamentally different and all these things, what does that afford you as a developer to get to take advantage of in this new hardware?
Well, there are a lot of new capabilities in the hardware that we have not explored too deeply yet, but that I'm looking forward to exploring. Things like the machine learning capabilities in the hardware. That there's this whole big section of, like, if you look at the map of the silicon that Apple published yesterday, or on Tuesday, there's a big section there dedicated to machine learning. And when they show their specs, they talk about how fast that section is. Well, right now, our apps are not making direct use of that at all. I don't know, maybe some of the operating system is using it on our behalf. But we would love to take advantage of that now that we know that it's there for things like, you know, maybe improving the line layout in OmniGraffle. Like, you can imagine reducing the number of line crossings or helping spacing or other sorts of problems. But that's a lot of new research that we have to be thinking about to really take advantage of that part of the hardware. In general, though, I'm just looking forward to having some great new hardware that gets faster and faster every year. As we look at the roadmap that Apple has had with the iPad and iPhone over the last decade, you know, we see it on this great trajectory that just gets much, much faster each year, every time they do a release. And we have not seen that in the Mac world because we've been based on the Intel processors that are not doing that. And so there was a time
every fall,
right back in the 90s, Intel was doing that. And it was exciting every year when they came out. And then we were very happy to jump on that train when Apple did the transition to Intel processors. But then it kind of stalled out with Moore's Law hitting that cap. And now we get to pick up that pace again.
That sounds interesting, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm always interested in the pieces that OmniGroup takes advantage of when there's new things that Apple makes available. How you all are gonna turn it into something cool that I can use? That's awesome. So, I think that's gonna do it for us today. Ken, go ahead and tell people when you're not behind a harp that other 99.99% of the time. Where can people find you?
Well, you can find me personally on Twitter at KCase, K-C-A-S-E. That's my first initial and last name. But of course, most of my, you know, anything about our products and so on, you'll find at our website, omnigroup.com.
All right. And as always, you can give the show feedback at observations@macobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter or leave comments in the show notes. Ken, as always, thank you so much for coming and taking the time to talk to me. You do this regularly. Whenever I have an opportunity to flag you down and talk to you somewhere, you always take a minute and make sure that that we get a chance to chat. And I just want you to know that I appreciate that.
Oh, well, thank you, Kelly. You know this, but the listeners probably don't, that the first time I remember meeting you was when we were at Macworld, and you came up to the booth and said, "Hey, can you come share your favorite apps with us on a podcast that we're doing over here?" and I was like, "Oh, I don't know. I maybe chat with some, you know, that's not that important for my stuff." And you said, "Well, come think about it and come on over to later anyway."
So that's right. I did. I had forgotten that I'd forgotten that I hadn't immediately sold you on coming and talking to a random person about the apps that you use most on your phone. Well, and I appreciate that.
Always fun to talk with you.
To this day, you continue to come talk to me. It always makes me happy. So thanks so much. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.